Now, Cabinet has approved proposals today from Justice Minister Helen McEntee to quickly draft legislation so that the UK can again be designated as a safe country to return people to seeking asylum. Sarah, remind us of the background to this and why it was felt that this legislation was needed.
Yes, so I suppose it all sort of kicked off last week when the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, was before the Oireachtas Committee, and she said that 80% of those applying for asylum here were entering Ireland through the land border with Northern Ireland. The Taoiseach Micheál Martin was away in the Middle East and told reporters in Jordan that he believed the UK's Rwanda bill was impacting on Ireland and said it was a knee-jerk reaction by the UK. His comments were subsequently picked up by the Daily Telegraph. They appeared on the front page there. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said that the claims the Rwanda plan was causing an influx of migrants into Ireland showed its deterrent effect was working. The Taoiseach Simon Harris weighed in and said, you know, Ireland wouldn't provide a loophole for other countries' migration challenges. Then on Sunday night, we saw the Department of Justice confirm that a meeting scheduled for the following day between the Minister for Justice and Britain's Home Secretary had been postponed and would be rescheduled. And, you know, the office, the Home Secretary's office said it was a diary clash, but this seemed like a bit of a snub. And then today, obviously, as you were saying, we saw the government approved plans to fast track the law that would allow Ireland to return asylum seekers to the UK.
And do we know anything about what's in that? Because it follows, I suppose, a High Court judgment that took into consideration the Rwanda plan, but another big consideration of this was simply how Ireland came to the conclusion that the UK was a safe country in the first place.
Yeah, so we had that High Court ruling in March, which said the UK should no longer be considered a safe country due to its Rwanda plan. But the safe country essentially means there is generally no persecution, no torture, or inhumane or degrading treatment. So Helen McEntee brought forward this plan to Cabinet today in a bid to once again certify that the UK would be seen as a safe country. Meanwhile, the government are sort of insisting that it's simply restoring an agreement that it had with Britain since 2020.
All right. John McGahan, what's going to make the UK a safe country? Something that there are criteria under EU law. Irish domestic legislation can't influence EU law, it can't influence UK law. So what is this legislation going to do?
Yeah, and I think that's been the confusion over the last 24 hours. So the context of it is quite important. And the context is the Dublin Regulation. And what the Dublin Regulation was, it came into force in 1997 across all EU member states. And that essentially meant that where somebody claims asylum in a country, that country that they first claim asylum in is responsible for the processing and decision-making of their application. That individual then can't go to another country and claim asylum there. So that has always been the way right up until the 1st of January 2020. On that day, obviously, the UK left the European Union. And what Ireland and the European Union agreed to was a bespoke arrangement, more or less simply replicating the Dublin regulation.
Ireland and the UK?
Between Ireland and the UK. And the UK, yeah. And that was done within the context of the Common Travel Area, which has existed for over 100 years.
All right.
So that was that. Now, fast forward to
What's in that, as far as you know? Because that was signed in November 20. There had been a memorandum of understanding signed in May 2019. This was signed in November 2020. So specifically on this reciprocity about sending back failed asylum seekers, what's in it?
So it does the exact same thing as the Dublin Regulation did, which, as I've said already, when you apply for asylum in one country, you cannot go to another country to apply for asylum there. And if that's the case, you have to go back to the country where you originally made your asylum claim for that to be adjudicated on in that jurisdiction.
And if that person has failed in their asylum claim in the other jurisdiction,
they cannot come here and claim asylum then, or they cannot go to another country to claim asylum, because it is down to the first country that they claim asylum in.
What if the UK's criteria for applying for asylum are not compatible with EU law, and therefore Ireland's criteria for applying for asylum are different?
So this is why it's important to get it on a legislative footing. So if we fast forward then to March just gone, so a couple of weeks ago, what happened was the Irish High Court decided that the UK wasn't a safe country because of its Rwanda policy, which is that they want to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda. So what we are now doing is we are taking that agreement that has already been established since 1997, has been an agreement between both our countries again since 2020, and we're putting it on a legislative and a statutory footing, which will designate the UK as a safe country. And if someone applies for asylum in the UK, they then cannot come to Ireland. And if they do come to Ireland, they have to go back to the UK. And we're putting that on a legislative and a statutory footing in this country, okay, which is a good thing.
As I understand it, I think it's paragraph 295 of the High Court ruling. It says that the reason that Ireland failed in its designation of the UK as a safe country was because it wasn't compatible with EU law. How is, I suppose, formalising an arrangement between Ireland and a non-EU country going to make that compatible with EU law?
You see, this is the whole thing about it. This is all based on a policy that has been put forward by the Tory government, a policy that is a joke, an absolute joke. 500 million quid has been spent by the Conservative government on a policy that has not sent one single person to Rwanda.
Well, the Conservative government
will not be in power within 6 months, and this entire policy will be scrapped. So it's not even something that's a realistic perspective. What this is red meat ahead of a local election. It's red meat for a load of little Englanders in Tory shires and the southeast of England in Tory strongholds. Right. And that's all this is. This is a political sideshow.
Near a slip of the tongue there. So there's John McGann's pitch for restoring calm intergovernment relations between the UK and Ireland. Rory O'Murchu, how is this going to be fixed?
Well, like all problems, there has to be a solution. Now, it wouldn't be the first time I said it here. We will have issues in relation to the border until the border is gone and we actually deliver United Ireland.
But in fairness, this is not an issue of the border. This is an issue of the common travel area. So if you're proposing on closing down the common travel area, that's a different kettle of fish.
No. What we see at this minute in time, what happened here is obviously Helen McEntee went into the Justice Committee and answered, which she says, on the basis of information provided to her by officials, that 80% of those applying for IP in this state had come through the north.
Bear with me a second. We'll get on to that. We'll get on to that on the basis for policy in a moment. But just on this issue of trying to resolve the issue of the UK being designated as a safe country from the Irish side, do you support Ireland's attempt in the first instance to designate the UK as a safe country?
See, if we have a legislative mistake that needs to be fixed, well, then we are in support of that objective. We haven't seen what's going to happen. We've also heard an awful lot of people with obviously far more legal expertise than me saying there are huge difficulties in relation to that. And right, there is the anomaly on the 80% and 90%.
Has your party seen the November 2020 Memorandum of Understanding that is supposed to have governed this up to the point that the High Court
ruling
knocked
it down? Yeah, and what we're hearing is that there's only a net change of, I think, 8 people who have been transferred in relation to that. Because my understanding of the Dublin Convention or Dublin Regulation is obviously you have to ask someone if someone has already made application in the other country. And you discover this, that you request that country would allow you to return those people to there. So I'm not entirely sure when this piece of legislation is put in place, what exactly we're talking about. The Taoiseach today spoke about the fact that he didn't believe this was the major issue, that he would say that, I suppose, given the circumstances. And he said that the way to change this was by upping the ability to process people and the times that it takes in relation to processing that apply. And I've heard some other legal experts say that, fair enough.
What's your party's fix to it?
Well, my party's fix, first of all, is we believe it would have been a hell of a lot better if the Taoiseach didn't provide, Rishi Sunak didn't provide the Tory party with what they wanted, which was the issue rather than any element of solution. I do think there needs to be communication with the British government.
He said that the assertion that 80% of people seeking asylum coming across were coming across the border, he said that was not based on evidence per se. I mean,
I'm not talking about that. But he spoke about this being a reaction in relation to Rwanda. He provided the Conservative press, he provided the Conservative Party with exactly what they wanted, which is the issue. And we've heard Rees Mogg and in his glory, you know what I mean, over the last number of days. So that's what has happened now. So to a degree, this is caught up in Tory politics at this point in time. Yeah, we need a solution. We need a solution fast. But the fact is, we have. no, I am going to say we have no confidence at this point in time on the basis of we've no surety round figures. We don't know what the solution's going to be. And we hear this is a vital piece of legislation needs to be fixed. We also heard about shoddy drafting at one point in time. And then we also hear from the Taoiseach saying, no, that there are other means and other more important means to deal with this. So we need...
We'll come back to
the fact is, there's no hand on the teller.
I want to let Violet Ann win here because she hasn't been in on this yet. The government's plan to fix this and to enable the government to send people back to the UK by fixing this piece of legislation, by fixing how it designated, I suppose, the UK as a third country and putting this memorandum of understanding on a statutory footing, would you support that approach?
Well, I don't buy it in the first instance. I think, you know, it's very convenient, I suppose, that the discourse now and the narrative on the immigration issue is focused on the UK and their Tory policy. Obviously, I don't agree with their policy, but that's their business, really. And I suppose, you know, I just think that the confusion and the row that has spiralled out over the last number of days has been a major distraction from, I suppose, the real, you know, issue at hand, and that is how we are dealing with our IPO applications currently and the length of time that it's taken to process them, and then also the lack of accommodation. You know, we have Nacka Laoiseen in County Clare, for example, who actually only had its first HICWA report there recently, and it failed on 20 areas of non-compliance. So, you know, the experience for those that are living in these direct provision centres that we're supposed to have been done away with now at this stage, which no end is in sight at this point in time. But I think, yeah, as I was saying, the confusion that has been created, like to have a minister to come out and say that this is the stats on the issue, 80% are coming from the UK, and then to have the Taoiseach come out and completely refute that claim and say that there is no validity on that statistic, that it's not based on data, it's not based on evidence. I think it's just been a major distraction, and now we find out that it's really actually just based on trends and experience, so it's completely subjective rather than based on objective data, you know, which should be leading the discourse.
Sarah Burns, are you any clearer on where this figure comes from? Because it seems to be, well, they didn't come in through the ports and airports, so the only other likely explanation is that they came across the border. Is that in essence what's behind this claim of 80%, now 90% coming across the land border?
Yeah, so I think Helen McEntee put that 80% figure out last week and it was accepted. And then the Taoiseach sort of questioned that in London yesterday, and he said that figure, it wasn't based on data, it wasn't evidence-based. Then in the Dáil this afternoon, the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, defended it, but accepted that it was almost impossible to know how many people were coming over the border on a daily basis. He said the people who worked in the International Protection Office were aware of the trends they were seeing, and they were the ones who had told the minister it was now over 80% based on their experience. Helen McEntee said, I think it was on the way into Cabinet, that she absolutely stood over the figures, or at that figure of over 80%. But then I think Cabinet were told that it was actually 91%. And then this evening on the 6-1 News, she had said she had had conversations with the Taoiseach and that he did stand over that 80% figure now.
All right. John McGann, there are people who come in through the airports. There are people who come in through the ports. Can it really be said that the rest come in for it's kind of is it not an incurious approach from government? If there was a route through, say, Rosslare on trucks where people were illicitly brought in, those people would not show up anywhere until they showed up at the IPO office. If there was another route of people being brought in by another informal means, that's not necessarily via the land borders.
Are already here.
But before the state gives its best guess scenario, should it simply say, we don't know?
So how all of this came to the fore was that in 2023, the IPAS, International Protection Officers who carry out these interviews, realised that there was a large percentage of people were saying that they weren't registering in the Republic. So they said, well, where are they coming from? So they changed the interview process, they changed the questionnaire process a couple of months ago. And with that, they then discovered that the vast majority of them, up until 80%, which is the figure that has been provided, the vast majority of them were coming via the land border. So we're coming into Belfast, we're coming into Larne, we're coming to the Republic across the border on the island of Ireland. Now, Those people are highly qualified, highly trained people working in the field, conducting face-to-face interviews with IPASS applicants. They're asking them, as you are interviewing me and I'm sitting here beside you, face-to-face, where they came from. And they're saying quite clearly, we came across from Northern Ireland originally. So that's where the data is coming from. So it's not...
But the person who's quibbling with it being forensic data was most recently the Taoiseach.
But it's not... If we want to quibble over whether it's forensic or whether it's anecdotal, this is what has been said to the people who are conducting
these interviews. Well, he said it wasn't evidence-based.
Right at the forefront. Yeah, but this is where the information is coming from. The information is coming from the people who are coming here, who are trying to claim asylum and are being interviewed by highly qualified, highly trained professionals. Now, to go back to the 91%, I don't believe that figure. I think that figure was leaked from Cabinet and I think it was the wrong figure. And I think that will be clarified.
Hang on a second. So what you're saying is you believe the 80% figure based on those officials doing interviews. But when they say 91%, those same credible officials who are experts in their field are not to be believed.
I just want to get this very clear. Nobody has said anything about 91%. That has come somewhere from a leak from somewhere. No politician, no government minister, nobody has said anything about 91%. It appeared as an anonymous source earlier on today. So the Taoiseach, the Minister for Justice, are standing over that 80% figure. I don't believe the 91% came from anywhere qualified whatsoever.
All right. I don't think the Justice Minister ruled out the 91% on the 6-1 when it was
She said today's figure of 91% represents those applying for asylum directly at the IPO.
No, I'm sorry, I have it from the department before I came on today.
That's from RTE.
That's the Justice Minister speaking on the 6-1. I am absolutely talking
about...
That's not RTE anonymously quoting someone.
That's the Justice Minister on the 6-1.
I'm sorry, I am quite clear with the information that I got.
It is up to 80%. Now, that would be really hard to know.
Sorry, can I just say one final thing?
Hang on a second, I want to let Violet Ann win there.
Just like if they're able to stand over the statistic of 80%, then why did we have the Taoiseach stand in the Dáil chamber today and say it's actually really difficult to know, you know, what the numbers are? Like, is the data being collected? Is it being stored? Is it something that we can rely on? Is it robust, or is it a case, as what has come out, that it's just trends based on what you're saying, the interviews that were conducted? Like, are they storing and securing that data, or is this just...
Well, I don't know where it's been
subjective information.
Whether it's subjective or not, it is the information that is coming from these people who are coming here, and is the information that is being provided to highly trained, highly experienced international.
It's not the major issue. Maybe we need a couple of extra questions at the IPO.
All right, Rory Mork, though, at the same time, there are more direct flights into the UK from locations all over the world where there aren't direct flights into Dublin. It would stand to reason that some of the people coming into Ireland, coming across the land border, are availing of direct flights into the UK and then moving internally in the UK and availing of the common travel area and coming over the border. There must be a proportion of them. Would you accept that?
I think we all accept. I think we can even accept if we had been told that 91% was on the basis of those who were applying directly at IPO and that there was a belief... and just that there weren't any exact figures, that it's a considerable amount of people and it may be up and in or around 80%. I accept it's very difficult to get this information, but despite all that, I think the fact is there is a considerable amount of people that seem that this is a trend that is happening, so it's a particular issue that we have to deal with.
Okay. And like, your party has said, I think every spokesperson for the party and most press releases on this issue over the last while has said, Sinn Féin does not believe in open borders. The border with Northern Ireland is an open border. So what would you do about a regular movement across the open border? What's the policy if you don't believe in open borders?
Well, yeah, no, I think we accept in relation to the fact that you need a rules-based system, right, that there are no open borders across Europe except the one that we are dealing with in the north. It's a border we would like to see rid of. That would obviously make this particular circumstance a hell of a lot easier to deal with.
I think unless you're proposing to get rid of the common travel area. I mean, that's the second time you said that. And it doesn't rid us of the issue, because even if Ireland was united in the morning, unless you're proposing to get rid of the common travel area with the UK, you would still have an issue of free movement of people between the UK and Ireland.
Slightly different in relation to, Well, here, I know exactly.
Are you proposing to get rid of the common travel
area? See, when I fly into Dublin, I show my passport, right, coming out of Britain. See, when I fly into the north, you don't have to. You know what I mean? I think that's the reality. That's the circumstances that exist there. I think at this point, we need to have a proper discussion that's away from the public domain with the British government in relation to how we deal this. Because also the other thing that has been discussed at the minute is that the guards are having discussions. A load of guards have been freed up so that they can engage in frontline duties. I don't know exactly what that exactly means. And that we need to make sure that the common travel area isn't abused. But I think there needs to be a lot more information in relation to what exactly we are talking about in relation to dealing with this.
Make a policy prescription. What should we be talking about?
Like here, do I make absolute policy prescriptions in relation to this? See if somebody has made application in Britain. See if they have come through. I think it is fair enough that we would have a facility to return those people to Britain. I think that's fairly straightforward. So we need to find a means of doing it. I'm not exactly sure how this is going to happen because we basically have been told that this is, as I say, the Taoiseach said, that actually rectifying this legislation is not going to be the major point that will actually deal with this issue, that it's a streamlining from a point of view of actually processing. So I'm even less sure in relation to what the circumstances are. And the other thing is, this blew up because what happened at the Justice Committee? So would this have even gone to Cabinet if it wasn't for what happened in the public domain when Helen McEntee brought up the 80%, first of all?
All right. Sarah Burns, the issue has now been running for a while. There was the Justice Committee last week. Obviously, this has been a long-running issue. But the questions that have been raised around the Justice Minister have been persistent for quite some time. Has this become a problem for the government, and has it become a problem in the form of Helen McEntee?
I think it's, you know, migration has been a big problem for the government in general over the last few weeks and months. We have our own sort of snapshot polls over the last few months looking at what are the big issues for voters, and the two main ones are housing and migration. I think this is going to run on, you know, especially because we see some of the reaction from the British government. They don't seem to be backing down. Our own government are quite clear in that they expect the UK to adhere to that operational agreement. But I think it's probably been a bruising few days for the Justice Minister.
All right. Violet Anwyn, what would you do about it?
So about the migration issue
If there are large numbers of people moving across the open border, first of all, how would you get an accurate read on it, number one, and what would your proposal be in terms of how to deal with the UK on this as to who takes who on this issue?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult, and I think the approach by government for the last, I'd go further than the last couple of weeks and months. I'd go for since I suppose the war in Ukraine and then the months that followed that. I think the migration issue hasn't been something that the government have grappled, and they haven't, I suppose, been willing to have an open and honest debate in the chamber. It's been pointed out by many in the opposition that there's been almost an exudance of fear, is what I would call it. So the reluctance and hesitancy from government to engage, to give communities, I suppose, information as well. Like I mentioned Nacka Laoiseann, and the provider there actually had pointed to the fact that he wasn't getting very much information from government in respect of who was being brought to that accommodation centre, so as in terms of services and that was going to be supplied. So I think that's been a major issue for government is the information and engagement and communication with communities.
So what would you do differently? Would you build more accommodation, give more information to communities? But if you were giving more information to communities, would that be in advance of building more accommodation, or would you be giving communities a veto on who comes and who goes?
Well, I think, you know, there's been certain counties and certain communities that have seen, you know, higher influxes of people to their areas, which, you know, can be seen as completely unfair. I suppose it's not been done on an equitable basis as such, but I do think that there is no it's not by mistake that, you know, Sarah just pointed to housing and migration being the two top issues for voters. And that is because we have such a housing issue here, and the numbers that we have in terms of those who are accessing emergency accommodation, we don't even really, you know, call them homeless people because they're not. They're just people who are entered into the emergency accommodation. So it leaves a whole cohort of people that are classified as the hidden homeless that aren't even counted and that don't seem to even actually feel like they matter to government because they're not counted. So I have a number of families in particular that are overstaying is the correct terminology, in their parents' homes, and their parents are either very old or incredibly ill, and they can't sustain three generations locked into one household for a long period of time. But that is what is currently happening. You know, there is no additional capacity. I've been raising that so in are, the are, likes
are,
of Claire.
Are you saying that is making people
angry?
Angry, and are they directing that anger towards migration? Are you making the link between those?
Well, I would think so. I think anyone who's been affected by homelessness or at risk of homelessness feels a huge amount of anger towards this government, that when they're listening to them in the Dáil Chamber, you know, they're quoting statistics and numbers and, you know, it's not resonating with them. It's not the experience that they are having, and they don't even matter, I suppose. There's no accommodation there. The rental market is completely defunct at this point in time.
I want to get back to the issue at hand there, and it's a procedural issue, John McGahan. Helen McAtee at the Justice Committee last week said that she was asked by Senator Gallagher at the committee whether what impact the asylum and migration pact would have on current migration figures, current asylum figures, should I say, excuse me, if the asylum and migration pact was in place. And she said that 5,000 people had applied for asylum so far to date in the year, and half of those were secondary movement, and that, you know, about, it would be reasonable to assume that about half of those could be sent back. When she talked about the 80% figure, and apologies to listeners here because a lot of percentages knocking around, when the 80% figure came out about people moving across the land border, some of that 80% were included in the other 50% figure. In other words, before they landed in the UK, they had been in an EU country before moving onwards to Ireland. If an application was made in Ireland, and if that person was not given leave to remain, to where would they be sent?
Yeah, so a couple of things on that. First of all, you're not obligated to claim asylum in the first country you land in the European Union. You could go to any country and you could move around, and you're not obligated to claim asylum in the first country you go to. So you could go to the UK, you could go to France, you could go to Holland, and then you could come to Ireland.
Are you not obliged to apply for asylum in the first country you land in under Dublin 3?
No, and I actually looked it up. I looked it up before. Under refugee conventions, you're not obliged to apply for asylum in the first country you come to. You don't have to apply for asylum in the first country you go to.
So under UN refugee conventions. Okay,
yeah.
But under the Dublin rules in Europe, is it not the case that you have to apply for asylum in the first country?
I'm going to double check that because it is complex enough. But from when I looked at that, because I just wanted to clarify that question myself, and when I looked it up and I researched it before I came on, it was quite clear to me that you do not have to apply for asylum in the first country. To answer your question, when we go back to it. So that's the first thing. The second issue about it is, where do those people go?
Yeah,
so,
no, I beg to differ on that assertion. If you land in the European Union, you must apply for asylum in the first country you land in the European Union. That's why Italy, Greece, all of those other countries, that's why there was such a controversy about people being allowed to move onwards to Germany without having first applied in a country the likes of Italy.
Yeah, okay. It's something I'm going to have to double check because I don't want to come on and say something wrong. I looked it up beforehand and that was the way I read it.
I suppose what I'm asking is if the person has been in both the UK and in the European Union, where is Ireland proposing to send people back to?
So if someone makes an asylum claim in the UK, then came to Ireland, they go back to the UK. They go back to the first country that they made their asylum claim in. And that has been standard procedure across the European Union since 1997. So that's where the person will go back to. But just to not to get away from it, this is just
and
something
that has been...
And if the
asylum claim is rejected, because I noticed the country... So take the current government policy. If somebody's asylum claim is rejected, they're not put on a plane and they're not sent out of the country. There is an expectation in some cases for people to self-deport.
Yeah.
Now, if Ireland expects somebody to self-deport having failed an asylum claim, it's unlikely that Ireland would expect another European country to then send that person back to Ireland. It's unlikely that Ireland would accept that person if their asylum claim in Ireland failed.
So again, in 2023, the stats from the Department of Justice were 760 people were issued with deportation orders. And Innes have provided information today that 96% of that 760 left the country voluntarily. So they are people who are issued with deportation orders and they've left. I've come across people in the town that I live in, the same as Rory, who were issued deportation orders because their asylum claims were deemed not to be valid for whatever reason, and they left. So that is the case. But what I would say about this, just to wrap the point up, is this is something that has existed since 1997. It is something that existed between Ireland and Britain since 2020. As a result of a High Court ruling 4 weeks ago, we're now putting on it on a legislative statutory basis to designate the UK as a safe country. That's right. That's proper. And all of this is a result of an absolutely bat's immigration policy from the Tory government. Right, well, a government who won't be in government in five or six months, okay, and we won't even be talking.
That might be the only thing we'll agree on.
Morgan, you're the EU affairs expert in your party.
Well, I'm certainly not an expert.
Well, a spokesperson. Let's have a look at what the situation is at the moment. Britain's complaint is, as Rishi Sunak articulates it, is that France is not taking back people who land in the UK, and therefore why should Britain take back people from an EU country, meaning Ireland? And I suppose ultimately when this memorandum of understanding is formalised, or when we get to see the text, we might know what the arrangement is between the UK and Ireland. But if people from the European Union land in Britain, it's proposed in Britain that they be sent back to France. France says it won't accept them. So those people use the common travel area then to travel onwards to Ireland. Where is Ireland sending them back to? Is Ireland sending them back to the UK, or is Ireland looking at its European rule book and saying under the Dublin Convention, actually that person needs to go back to France? So in effect, well, Ireland would be doing the job Britain wants done for it.
And we could get into Rees-Mogg saying that they should just arrange to have people at the border so they could cross it, you know what I mean, those that have failed. There's a number of questions here, and that's what I had said earlier. I have seen no clarity in relation to what the government is actually talking about of the case of this legislation is going to be fixed, or by whatever means, let's say, that the Taoiseach is talking about as regards streamlining and speeding up these people as they make application. I don't know where exactly they're being sent back to. I don't know how exactly they're being sent back. I get the idea of the Dublin Convention in the sense that you have to make a request and then that country has to agree with you in the first place. And we saw that issue in relation to 3 versus 188 and the other question that Helen McEntee couldn't answer in the Justice Committee, which again adds to the lack of confidence that people have that there is actually a plan in place and that there is actually going to even
be a
solution.
She said didn't have the figures to hand, but she would get back to the committee. She would get back to the committee with them. Just on the memorandum of understanding that was signed in November 2020, has your party seen the text of that?
I personally haven't seen the text.
Would you like to see it published?
I don't see any reason why we wouldn't want to see it published. If it is continuity, obviously, of the particular rules that pertained when Britain was in the European Union, we can probably guess what exactly is in this. But the fact is, we need this legislation dealt with, but we also need to get some sort of, as I say, greater level of information in relation to what exactly we are going to be talking about as regards if people are coming across the border, they're making their application and they have previously made that application in Britain or possibly somewhere else before that, how we're going to deal with it.
Okay, John McGann, are we going to see this with this memorandum of understanding?
Yeah,
because the 2019 one is on the Department of Foreign Affairs website and you know, there's a provision there made, I think, in paragraph 16, the oversight bit, where it says that there's going to be, there's officials will exchange information and there'll be a committee on the common travel area on migration will operate, which presumably then must have worked towards this November 2020 agreement. Would you like to see it published?
So, but before I chat about that, I just want to absolutely clarify what I said about asylum seekers, because I've checked it here. Right. This is coming from the Journal, the 13th of January, 2024, only a few months ago. The idea that asylum seekers are supposed to apply in the first safe country or the first European member state they reach is one of the most common instances of misinformation about asylum seekers. The Dublin 3 regulation in turn is expected to be, sorry, the in the convention
set
out.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. We'll come back after that. We can clarify all matters after that.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.